leadership of the Demarcation Board, the leadership of SALCA, MISA, and thank you very much for this, for coming and accepting my invitation to visit the National Assembly for us to have a discussion on the report of your entities. And we hope that you are going to assist us to raise issues that you want to raise. We always prefer when presentations are made to policymakers, should you go in the minute details. Mission and statement, we know all that, is to start giving us the real issue that concerns you in terms of the act, or in terms of the policy, or in terms of any proposal that you think is important to take Parliament to the next level of development. The members will engage with you in the discussion. And we finalize the report for National Assembly. And if your report is accepted by National Assembly, it must be evident that we have done a good job. If the National Assembly rejects your report, then you must know that we have done a bad job. I hope that we'll be able then to deal with the issues. Give ourselves time to raise concerns with the concerns and then address the problem that we are facing. Congratulations again to Councillor Pakistan. I know that Honor Mason Pakistan is a mayor of the world. Is that correct? SALCA is that correct? That's elected in Colombia to be a mayor of the world. Or mayor of cities of the world. All cities in the world are part of the organization. And then the superman. How long is the term? 5 years, huh? 3 years of term. Okay. No explanation of time. You must come to Parliament well prepared. Don't come with your report only because of course questions that are not on your report. You must anticipate Parliament. Let us start with the Demarcation Board after we have received the apologies. An apology for members of Parliament and the apology.
Apology for Ms. Mutimbu. She is ill today.
She is. Or she is. Members of the agenda is presented for your consideration. I will help with the agenda. Honourable Dow, help with the agenda. Honourable Benham, help with the agenda.
In the time, Chair.
Okay. Let us proceed and invite SALCA, Demarcation Board first. SALCA will follow. never not amended at all, if they need to amend or not, but I will create a space. And otherwise, there's a lot of words for you, but you have done extremely well, and we are very congratulations. Take us through.
And that you would see later as they come to Parliament prison because of that inability. Hello.
Thank you very much, Shepherd Lord Paul and the team. Let me invite on our members who want to comment and for some question. Ted or Melham, my son.
Thank you, Chair.
Good morning. My first point, I'm looking at the way you run your finances in that department, your budgets. What constitutes most of your admin costs? Well, that admin cost, that's where part of the money is going to raise up the your operational cost. What makes that? And looking at your budget, is it a matter of budgeting or is this issue of underfunding? Because most of the year you run your deficit in that respect, but most of your money goes to your admin cost. If you include your employees' cost, then you're out of budget already. And I wonder how you deal with the other problems. Problems here are not being funded at all.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start by congratulating the board on achieving a keen audit. I am a little bit concerned that I don't think you would have gotten a clean audit if the AG had taken into account the performance measures when giving you that result. And specifically, I refer to page 66 of the annual report, where the AG says 100% of the reported targets were not consistent with those in your APP. In other words, what you were reporting on wasn't what you had said you were going to report. There was a difference between what you said in your APP and what you actually reported on. Then they say that 67% of your targets were not specific and measurable, 67% of indicators were not well defined, and 67% of indicators were not verifiable. All of those are matters within your control. They are matters that you need to keep better records of, better source documentation, better outcomes and better targets. So I think that this is something that I'm pleased to see that the board has got an action step in that regard. I am concerned that this is something that you need to address and you can't allow it to slip. Then, Chairperson, just a question. How many municipal capacity assessments, were completed during the year in review? The reason I ask this is because twofold. First of all, you concluded a number of demarcation decisions where you decided on new municipal boundaries, Section 22 demarcations, etc. How did you do those if you didn't have capacity assessments of the municipalities in hand? On what criteria how can you come to a decision if you don't have a municipal capacity assessment? I want to take it one step further. The Fiscal and Finance Commission yesterday said in the Standing Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs in the NCOP that many of the amalgamated municipalities should never have been amalgamated because they are not financially viable. Now, we warned about this before the elections. We warned this board about it. We took you to court over it. The DA, I'm talking about, took you to court over it. And yet, there seems to have been very little consideration for that, and now those municipalities are struggling. So again, I ask, how do you come to a determination without municipal capacity assessments? Which then brings me on to the second part of that question, which is relating specifically to the money that was spent on Program 2. Where you budgeted about 1.3 million, which amongst other things was to address capacity assessments. You spent 411,000, 85% of which was on personnel costs, and yet that program has zero personnel associated with it for the year-end review. How do you justify that? Then my last comment, Chairperson, for now, relates to slide 36. I attended that post-election demarcation review conference. I was there. And a lot of the because I didn't hear that. I heard that the MPP strongly believes in those legislative amendments, but I certainly didn't hear that there was strong support from the stakeholders for some of those legislative amendments. And I want to highlight one in particular, and that is the review of the ward delimitation criteria, and particularly the variation. The Demarcation Board proposed that the variation be amended from 10% of the norm to 30% of the norm. So that would mean that you could be 30% above the norm or 30% below the norm. Now, if in a municipality, and let's take a typical metro municipality, let's take my municipality, Buffalo City, the norm is around 10,000 voters, roughly. If we say that's the norm, that means that 30% more would be 13,000 voters, and 30% less would be 7,000 voters. So you're saying in one ward, 7,000 voters elect a ward councillor. In fact, you don't even need 7,000 voters, you only need 3,500 voters to get a majority in that ward. And in the ward right next door, you need 6,500 voters. How is that possibly democratic? How is it possibly democratic that in the same municipality you can have a variation of 60%, 30% above, 30% below of the norm? What is the thought process behind that? Because I can't see any logic in that. I can't see any democracy in that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, just to say that congratulations for the achievements that have been made. So I think we should start on a positive note, Chairperson. But go on to note, amongst others, the following issues. The irregular expenditure of 660,000 rand is reflected on page 9, 660. In documents, the number of my pages are not the same as yours, so I'm sure able to identify the slide. And the deficit. But also note the conference held in June and the consultation is seeking to consolidate experiences and lessons learned. It will be very useful to share this with the committee. So that more or less we're on the same page with regard to what kind of progress is being made to identify the key issues and what kind of possible follow-ups are being pursued from your side. Because we're not part of the conference, I'm sure there'll be a lot of things that would be of interest to us and that would benefit the work of the committee overall. And then the challenges, I think many of these are raised in the concluding slide. But it would be very, very useful to not just raise the challenges. I know that it's important to raise the challenges, but also point out what kind of reflection you've had on the issues, and how do you see this issue being sorted out in the medium, even longer term? Then the issues that I thought are also important in relation to performance. So while we congratulate you for good work done, but it may just be there are certain areas where there are problems, and it may be, it may benefit us if we to explain why some of these continue to be problems, and what is it that needs to be done with respect to them. For instance, on page 28, there's infrastructure implementation that we are raising in relation to performance. On page 15, the question of partnership with similar research type organizations. On page 16, my document, the failure to hold a demarcation review symposium. I know that we have a conference in June. I don't know if that has assisted to address this kind of issue. Then there's a question of compliance with cost-containing measures. The finance is being a concern. I'm just raising that. The question of the source of revenue is important. But it would be very interesting to find out from you, having studied, I'm sure you've studied other similar type organizations, interacted with similar bodies, this source of revenue equation, what are the possibilities that we have looked into if we have? We've had an opportunity to do that. Chairperson, maybe I should stop there and note the role that has been played by the demarcation board in the whole process of reduction of municipalities, and that is truly appreciated. On the legal cases, this is the last point, on the legal cases, one appreciate the point that these have been enumerated. I think there are four cases that have been raised, legal cases. It would be very useful to have a high-level summary of these cases. For example, the DA case is what the case was about. This is how court concluded. I think these cases are found on page 33. Of my own document here. There's the Masia case, the Pavel's municipality case, Midpark municipality. I know that the legal people deal with many, many cases, but these are that the cases that I'm talking about here are in relation to local government. Just a high level summary, not details, would be very useful.
Thank you. Mdao, you want to put a question?
No, thank
you. Okay. Okay. Let me invite the demarcation board to attempt to answer some of the questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will leave the questions that deal with financial issues to the CFO, and I believe board members will be free to fill in on questions that they may want to add. But let me first start with the questions raised by Honorable Miller on the annual report. I fully agree with you on the performance issues. And if you note in my overview in the annual report itself, I did note that much as we are happy that this organization has achieved its first clean audit since is what it was established. We are nonetheless still concerned about performance issues, and we're working very hard to address those. It's not necessary that we go into lamenting why things have been like this. We are addressing them. We didn't have any HR component, and a large component of the challenges in this organization. Going back to lack of resources, and I want to give an analogy. We have a very high staff turnover. At some stage, we don't have a head of HR at all. You have very junior people. People who work in the board would want to take the next job that's available immediately. Because of lack of sustainable resources looking into the future, we have some of the critical positions on contract basis. And when people are on contract, they would want to leave when they get something sustainable. Only until such time that we have resources not relying on accumulated surpluses, because they won't last forever. When you're using surpluses, you can only hire people and guarantee contracts to a period that takes you to the exhaustion of those surpluses. Only when you have guaranteed MTF kind funding will you then establish positions as permanent. So we continually experience challenges that link to our high staff turnover, which at times leave the organization without people who have the know-how on particular in relation to this one, how to craft your performance in a particular manner, but also largely to say, when you realize you've made mistakes in the wording, how you word your performance, you can still go correct and go back to the portfolio committee and say, we are correcting. So the kind of knowledge had been lacking that would have helped us correct the things before they would you'd reach the end of the reporting period with the wording of our performance and targets being what it was. We are indeed addressing those challenges. On the municipal capacity assessment, honourable member, the board would never conduct or make any determinations or redeterminations without being informed by extensive information that includes the capacity of the municipalities that are concerned. Honourable members would remember that ever since 2014, we had not done any municipal capacity assessments widely because of a litigation that was going on. We did submit a forensic report to you at the end of the period when we concluded on the forensic, but we couldn't go ahead to run the capacity assessment for the country, the municipalities countrywide, because of that litigation. A challenge that we had when we were reversing an award that was irregular. However, when we received a Section 22.2 proposal from the minister, we only had assessments that targeted the affected municipalities. So the studies, investigations that were done for the affected municipalities were in part looking at the capacity of those municipalities to ultimately inform the final determinations and redeterminations. And perhaps I have to keep saying it again and again, that honourable members should remember that there were 34 proposals that were received by the board during January up to March 2015. And a number of considerations, including the issues that honourable Mellon is raising, that in some areas we thought timing was not allowing us to deal with those, and in other areas the proposals were rejected. The only 13 that we went ahead with, or that were ultimately approved, were the ones where there was convincing evidence that the municipalities would be sustainable. We wouldn't just irresponsibly deal with the proposals in a manner that would make these municipalities unsustainable. I think I've already explained that why any money that would have been targeted for municipal sometimes early this year. The conference issues, honourable member, the conference was meant to indeed consolidate and get to hear the country. And you'd remember, if you look at the numbers of people who attended the conference, you'll appreciate that those were stakeholders. Those were not the public. We had been engaging with the public throughout the country for 2 years, between 2014 and 2015, meeting ordinary members of the community who were challenging us, even on the criteria, who were challenging us, even on the use of the population vis-a-vis the number of registered voters. We do appreciate that our law, as it stands now, provides that wards are being delimited for the purpose of voting purely, and that is why the criteria are leaning towards voting and not looking at other elements which the communities are raising. Now, one of the issues that we try to maintain stability in the local government sector is when we delimit wards, we try as far as possible not to shift wards, meaning we try to maintain wards as they are, so that you don't have, or you have fewer people who knew that we were in Ward 1 finding themselves in a ward called Ward 5. That is the first thing that we try to do. Now, without any reasonable deviation, we cannot do that. We end up having to change the wards, and again, people are very unhappy when those wards change. Now, this kind of engagement, and I know that it's just the beginning, and valuable inputs, such as the ones the Honourable Member is raising, will come forth. Because as we submit legislative proposals, we first state the problem statement, to say this is the problem, because we cannot propose any change of legislation where there is no problem. We state the problem and state the options, various options that could be considered to resolve that question. You're having on what, you're having the service delivery functions, you're having the voting functions. Indeed, in terms of the number of voters, when you have a variation that goes much bigger, then you're breaking on equity in the number of voters, the strength of votes. A representative in a particular ward may be disadvantaged when you go too far below the norm. Those are the issues that we're grappling with, but we're saying if we understand the problem and also understand that wards, yes, they serve an electoral purpose, but they also serve a service delivery purpose. Now, the board is caught in the middle. The people are saying you keep changing us from ward to ward every 5 years when you come, and yet it's not the board, it's the law as it stands. Now, you lawmakers and the public and everybody else, we have to engage and find a solution. We state the problem and throw in options, and because we propose legislative review to say, how do we resolve this? One man stands who may not even have gone much to school, but come up with a very brilliant argument. The Denver matter was typical, the Denver hostel issue. There's people saying, I was in this ward and I'm now in this ward. In this ward, I knew I was close to a list of getting a house. Now the board comes and says, I'm not in this ward. And with a very small margin of variation, you would not go beyond any reasonable area where you are keeping a community that regards itself as one together. You have to abruptly cut that community because the norm ends here. It's about throwing the net. Once the norm says, this is where you end, whether it's in a ditch, whether it's just on the road and these people are saying, but across the road, these are my people. But that's how the board has to do its work, and we throw in this back to say, let's engage, let's find solutions that will make our people's lives better. The board is not insisting on any 30%. We say, if there can be a solution other than increasing the variation, that solution should be a solution that suits the country and our people. I guess those were the questions from Honourable Mellem and from Honourable Masondo. We will, I guess, the acting CEO, you noting this, just a high-level summary of the cases. We will submit. We will do those. The continuing challenges, indeed we are addressing them, as Martha indicated, the lack of resources and failure to incentivize people to stay, and keeping them on contract is something that's beyond us, and the constant changes in people that we have and their capacity is something that we continue to grapple with, and hence sometimes mediate our inability to meet certain challenges. I believe that we will have an opportunity in terms of the legislative proposals, honourable members, to engage with the committee. Our first step as the board indeed is to head over to COFTA, but it will be useful as our principles that even before this runs through its process in Parliament, we can sit around the table on a session and discuss these issues. It is useful to understand the full background behind the problems and the reasons why we're proposing changes, other than when you just see them as changes in a bill after a professional award. That we will indeed appreciate that session.
Thank you very much. Regarding the question of administrative costs, the details of that are provided on page 94 of the annual report, but they by and large unavoidable fixed costs, typically what we have under, although we show 50 million administrative costs, we didn't show costs like internal audit costs, legal costs, printing costs, publication costs, recruitment costs, security services, and telecommunication costs. So they largely, Mr. Chair, I would say unavoidable fixed costs. There are always initiatives that we do try to contain costs to get more efficient, to save costs, but by and large they are costs that we will always incur. So that as far as admin costs are concerned, but there are always drives, as I say, to contain these as much as we can in terms of telephone costs. Typically, we recover private calls made by employees. So there are initiatives to that extent. Same thing with electricity costs. No lights burn overnight. So the quick gains, we have looked at those and we have incorporated them into our way of working. In terms of underfunding, yes, I did mention that we historically were underfunded. Typically, if we don't get extra funding from the National Treasury, then inevitably the challenges that came out will inevitably persist. Then in terms of irregular expenditure, yes, we had two instances of irregular expenditure amounting to 66,000. There was an instance of 48,000 and another one for 18,000. And again, as the assurance that we give the committee is that our procurement policies have now been interrogated, they've been aligned to the necessary prescripts, and have been workshopped as well. So hopefully going forward, we shouldn't have instances of irregular expenditure. It's unfortunate we did have the two instances. Then in terms of, yes, on page 28 of the slide, there were delays in procuring the server. Again, the delays was mainly due to that we reassessed our IT requirements going forward. So we did a holistic review of our IT infrastructure, what our requirements were going forward. So hence there was a delay. So we better informed in the procurement that we did in the current financial year. Then when it comes to the sources of revenue, yes, we had interactions with various institutions. There was no real commitment for additional funding, but I think an institution like the MDB, we're going to be very careful from which source we take income. Because again, there's such a thing as independence as well. But going forward, what we're looking at is probably a model or a strategy as to how we go about securing additional sources of revenue. This is over and above the transfers that we get from the fiscal sector. Chair,
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, committee members. Yes, I'd just like to give a little bit more background around the question that was raised regarding the financial viability of local municipalities. We're guided by Section 25 of the Act, which gives about a dozen criteria that need to be taken into account when we determine a municipal boundary. And financial viability is only one of the 12. And it's not given any priority. It's not stated as the determining factor, it's one of 12. And if we took that as the only factor to be considered, we would almost end up with some areas not falling within a municipality because they're not financially viable. But there are still people there who need services delivered. And our municipalities have got a long way to go, some of them a very long way to go, to become financially viable. And there's a lot of issues that need to be addressed. Some of them very contentious and at a political level, things like no payment for service delivery. So there's no cost recovery on services delivered to people. And a municipality struggling with those issues is never going to be financially viable until it can address those kind of payment issues. A municipality has the ability to raise funds, but only if people pay for services delivered. So the idea around amalgamating municipalities or looking at different groupings of geographical areas is to see how one could potentially cross-subsidize another in an effort to reach sustainable viability, you know, financial viability. But it's always a big challenge, and given the huge pockets of poverty that we are dealing with in our municipalities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Follow-up? Madam?
Chair, just two very brief follow-ups. The first one is I didn't get an answer about the Program 2 expenditure, of which 85% was on personnel costs, and yet that program has zero personnel attached to it. That's the first thing. The second had to do with the variation, and I note what the chairperson has said, and I take that on board. I do think it's possibly a little bit irresponsible to put forward a legislative proposal, without having fully considered the implications of that proposal. And as I indicated to you, one of the implications is the impact on democracy. Coming to the last point, and this has to do with the amalgamations and the financial viability. I agree that financial viability is only one of the criteria, but I think everyone would agree that it is arguably the most important criteria. If you don't, you've said it yourselves, if you don't have the resources, you can't do your job. So, who does it benefit to take a financially unviable municipality and amalgamate it with a financially viable municipality and drag both of them down? And I'm going to give you some examples. Ikwezi, in the Eastern Cape, is a totally dysfunctional municipality. Is a tiny little municipality. It has been incorporated in the new Bayers Nordier municipality, which includes the former Kamdeboer municipality, which arguably was one of the best-run municipalities in the Eastern Cape. Financially, operationally, it was a very well-run municipality. And with Babians, which was also, generally speaking, an acceptable municipality. It wasn't perfect. There were issues, but you know what? They were holding their own. Now you've got this complete drain on their resources. From Kraaffreinet, which is the center of that municipality, to Jansenville is about 120 kilometers. And you have to deliver services in that municipality. It is probably the single biggest local municipality in the country in terms of geographical area. And yet, we are expecting a viable municipality merged with a non-viable municipality to somehow be viable going forward. That's where I have a problem. That's where I believe the inputs of the FFC have not been given due consideration, and where we have not
And I don't only blame the NBB for this. I blame the department for this, because it is a lack of support to those municipalities to address their systemic issues. That is why we are having to take them and merge them with a functional municipality. I think that there is not enough thought given to the long-term impact of the decisions that are being made. It's almost like, well, let's take this one and this one, put them together and hope that they're going to work going forward. Hope and pray. There's no analysis, there's been no capacity assessments, we can't get to a decision if we don't have the data and the projections and what's going to happen here. And I think that there needs to be closer cooperation between the minister, the department, and the board in this regard. I do believe that the Section 22 notices that came at such a late stage really threw the rock into the pond and created all sorts of unintended consequences, both for the board, for the IEC, for the local government elections, etc. But financial viability has to be one of the key criteria. Whether or not it is prioritized in the legislation, you have to come back to it and say, are we doing enough with the resources we have? And if not, what do we need to do? Is merging these municipalities going to make them better, or is it going to drag down an already functioning municipality? And that's what we're seeing happening in many, many cases of amalgamation.
Two issues, Chairperson. The first one is on legislative constraints. The second issue is on the forensic audit on capacity assessment. On the first one, legislative constraints, the presentation talks of gaps for potential to build instability. Gaps for potential to build instability. What do you mean by this? Just for the future of clarity. On the second question, on the forensic audit on capacity assessment tender. Just to clarify what this tender was about. And secondly, just to state what corrective measures have been taken.
To the question by Honourable William regarding to funding of Programme 2, but to say again that I would wish that Parliament doesn't throw back at us problems that are to do or that should be resolved by Parliament. The law, this legislation is a problem, and this legislation never said financial viability is one of the most important criteria above the others. And if we begin to do that, someone will take us to court and they will win. But also financial viability has got different elements. It's not only revenue. Financial viability also has got an element of financial management. There are municipalities that might be able to generate revenue, but the management of the money that comes into a municipality leaves much to be desired, and it may lead to unsustainability whilst revenue is being generated. So it has got various dimensions, but it's not the overarching criteria. As of when the lawmakers shall have changed the law, the board will implement it as it will be. We are looking forward to that period of a lot of certainty with the Act, and that is why we are proposing for legislative review. And members will appreciate the things that we are raising. We're not raising things that are not well thought. Unfortunately, we meet in short sessions where we just say variation or whatnot, but when you look at our proposal, you will see that the issues that Honourable Miriam has raised had been considered. We know that wards have to balance equitable number of voters. And that is why even when the public was raising the question of why use number of registered voters and not the population, it's something that we know why, because the population doesn't vote, the voters vote. The number of population might be something else in that area, but the number of voters is the one that is a determining factor, because this is about voting and balancing, making sure that no councillor is advantaged over the other if you having wards that are not equitable in terms of this. And that's why we'll be throwing in options even as we are proposing a legislative review. The gaps that we are saying breed instability or legislative uncertainty, we continually, as you can see, people are unhappy about consultation. And people, I'll give you an example, people would go to court, because the court will interpret legislation, which we are supposed to interpret and implement, would say the board did everything that is right. But if you look, just take one section, for example, that section 26, which is supposed to be the key section dealing with public participation, it's about public notification, largely. Say notify, send this and that, send this and that, and if you do that, you'll have done everything that the law requires. We already, as I indicated, we have been going beyond that. But if you don't deal with legislative issues to make sure that where the law says we must consult, it must clearly say consult, and we would there. I mean, there, and the regulations would indicate how you should consult, what the objectives of those consultations would be until such time decisions are made. There are quite a number of contradictions and grey areas in the Act, and until such time you are able to read our proposals, you'll be able to appreciate the challenges and help us to resolve them. Hopefully that we don't find ourselves going through another cycle of determination without the legislative gaps having been addressed.
Thank you, Chair. I do appreciate the question on page 56, which in essence says that there was a total expenditure of 411,000, of which personnel cost was 350, and there's no personnel reflected there. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would rather revert back to the Secretariat in a more structured manner. My sense is maybe the numbers, but consolidated, as you tell us, but I would rather research this thing and revert back to the Company Secretary on a structured manner. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chairperson, I didn't address Honourable Masonda's questions about the forensic investigation. This forensic investigation had to do with the tender that was awarded, a tender to do capacity assessment for municipalities in the country. It was awarded a few days before the board came into office in February 2014. But on close scrutiny and even upon other participants in the tender raised an alarm and realized that indeed a number of irregularities had occurred. But having noted that we then engaged experts who would look into this, but it wasn't our first point of call. We first tried to negotiate with the company that had obtained the tender to say they should just withdraw, realize. And we showed them that this was irregular. It was irregularly awarded, but unfortunately they resorted to threats of litigation, and we conducted a forensic investigation. And only after they had seen the report, they then realized, and our founding of the affidavit of the case, they only withdrew thereafter. But a copy of that forensic investigation is there. It highlights what went wrong, and we are saying we addressed most of those things. The things that are systemic, they were things that are people issues, where individuals have done things that we're not supposed to have done, but there are issues that were systemic, which we also have addressed. Thank you.
Okay, honourable members and the board. Honourable members, you are happy now? Melham, fine? Professor Puviso?
Okay.
Well, Councillor? Okay. Well, let us then proceed. And thank you very much for the board presentation. It's very helpful. It's a difficult work to do. I think we are doing well, we are working hard. You have unqualified audit. I'm not sure that Melham, the unqualified audit is equal to clean audit. Even if there are no issues. Okay, because it seems that qualified, no matter of emphasis, almost there to clean audit. I'm not sure what is the clean audit, but I think we're almost there. Professor Kubiso, you know it.
I only know that what the same said. But as you correctly put it, we are almost there.
Okay. That's wonderful. Okay, thank you very much to the leadership of the board. Great work. We hope you are going to improve it from here. Identify